It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I was just sitting there trying to remember the words to the... Nah, never mind. Yes, first question, yes, this is live. This broadcast is taking place on Wednesday, the 13th of June, 2018. I am, in fact, Bob Kincaid. I'm not a rerun. I feel like crap, okay? Let's just get that out of the way. I feel awful. By way of, I don't know, setting up the clip or whatever. I've been gone for the last couple of days. I've been flat on my back in bed. That's where I've been. And not in a good way. I have problems with my innards. And every now and then they light up in a really big, bad way. And by light up, I mean kind of stop working or go sideways. It's some sort of multi-pronged nastiness that begins with a big load of sludge coming out of my gallbladder and going over and blocking off the pancreatic duct. And my pancreas goes, "Nah, fuck you." And for anybody, and I know, for instance, our buddy Kevin in Colorado Springs and several other people have had pancreatic attacks, and they know what not fun they are. Now, this is not me pissing and moaning and poor, poor, pitiful me-ing. I'm just trying to tell you what's going on. You know by now, I hope, that I don't just bail out of work. Because, you know, I've got the sniffles or something. No. Look, it was a sniffle. And, of course, I'm trying to... Damn it. Okay, we're going to hold on here. I'm in the chat room, but I'm not in the chat room. How's that for fun? Because it would just be entirely too much to ask for everything to just be smooth as silk this evening. Now I'm in the chat room. Okay, goody. I don't know what it was. Friday night, I had some Italian sausage and some hummus. And maybe I had it too late. Saturday night, I fixed Agnes a nice piece of salmon on the grill with that lemon dill aioli that I get over at Kroger's. She loves it that way. fixed it for her on a cedar plank. I'm new to cedar plank cooking. Apparently, the cedar plank doesn't make it through. Well, this one didn't. It turned into charcoal. But Agnes apparently liked it that way because not a big eater, Agnes. No, I did not get the food poisoning, Anatole. She wolfed it down, and, well, me, I fixed myself up a real nice cheeseburger. And then Sunday morning, I woke up and I got up Sunday morning and I was just in a world of pain. And I know what these things feel like when they happen. And so consequently, I immediately went over to the Sweat Condition Alpha diet, i.e. water. Not bread and water. Water. Not the brat diet, you know, bananas, rice, applesauce, and toast, or whatever. No, water. And sip, and no food. And part of the reason that I'm not in the best of shape right now, energy-wise, is the fact that that cheeseburger Saturday night was the last thing I've eaten. And, you know, it's for this reason, it being prayer meeting Wednesday. I'm sorry, I'm not going to do the prayer meeting Wednesday thing. Heh. Okay, there, I'm done. Heh. It's because of, I know what it's like going through this, that I reject religious stupidity that says, hey, you know what you need to do? Not eat food for several days to prove to God that you love him. Or so God will love you more. No, no, no. So sincerely, no. Because if there's a deity that created us and created us to consume fuel in order to keep on being alive, then not doing that which we were created to do is kind of insulting when you get right down to it. No, no, Lord, I'll just stop eating for a day or two. I'll stop eating for a day or two, Lord, just to prove how much I love you so that you'll love me more. Fuck that. What a load of shit. I mean, how stupid can a religion be that says that you should that you should give up the thing that supports life? Do you think in the early evolutionary days of various religions, they started out that, hey, let's stop breathing to show God we love him. Oh, shit, everybody died, man. Okay, well, we won't drink water. Nah, okay. Kidneys shut down, son of a bitch. You think about things like that. But the other funny thing about being in an enforced situation of not eating is that it wasn't like I've been sitting around going, you know what, I want a big old steak. No. Not at all. Did you tune in to hear all this? I'm guessing the answer is no. But just the same, I want you to know where I've been. And I'm already getting online scolding from the likes of Steve in New York. I'm going to scold you. If you feel you must bug out early, you better damn well do so. You know what? I may not be here for the full 3 hours, but I felt like I had to be here. I'm going to try to at least get through an hour or so. There's not a lot to me right now. Is there a benefit to any of this? Is there a silver lining to this great big cumulonimbus cloud? I had no problem at all not paying a lick of attention to anything that Julius Geezer has done in the last several days. None whatsoever. The thing happened in Singapore. The for-profit media behave. You know, and it occurred to me that we could describe just about anything that goes on with this regime this way. He did the thing. The for-profit media talked about the thing he did, and got it completely wrong. And then he complained about how the for-profit media got the thing he did wrong, and then the for-profit media talked about him complaining about how the for-profit media got it wrong about the thing he did. Close, at least. Bronze medal, maybe? Because that's what it feels like. But Look, when you're on the Limbaugh diet, you know, opioids and water, I'm going to really catch up on my Breaking Bad. Just watching something, no. Tried to watch nothing, no. Couldn't watch things, but I could read. And, I don't always get over to see Boss Man Wayne and check on what's in the mail. Every couple of weeks, sometimes as long as a month in between. But I picked up a box from Boss Man Wayne. And in it were three books from our buddy Gary in New York. And one of them... Wait a minute. I'm sick, not dead. Ron in Raleigh says, live, you say? Bob, stop telling us how to not eat food, Bob. I used to fast for cleansing purposes. It really clears the mind if done properly. Maybe the key to that whole thing, Ron, is not having a complete metabolic war going on in your innards. Maybe, I don't know. At this rate, though, when I finally do get around to getting back on the yogurt diet and sipping at some chicken broth here and there, I needed to lose some weight anyway. So we'll work that angle. That's what we'll do. Gary had sent me a couple of books. One of them, a collection of writings about Brooklyn that I have found absolutely fascinating because, as we sat there last February, he heard me waxing on about how fascinating I find the city. But he also heard me talking about trying to find the last vestiges of the history of the island before it got paved. And so he sent along a book, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. It's called The Island at the Center of the World. It was published in 2004. And it is about specifically the Dutch period of colonization of New York. And I mean to tell you, I'm devouring it. Now, even as we speak, one of the things that I've been dealing with, and I think it comes with the opioids, is just an absolute crushing headache. That happens from time. I get that. So, read a little, snooze a little. My sleep schedule is a total train wreck. Because when you're sleeping more or less a little, catnapping all day long, off and on, after about a day, you don't have a sleep schedule anymore. How crummy have I felt? Yesterday morning, I woke up in time for the beginning of that nasty little habit that I have on MSNBC in the mornings. I clicked it on just long enough to hear a couple of the usual voices and went, nope, can't do it, can't handle it, bye now, and turned it off, read a little bit more of the island at the center of the world, nodded away again, and, that's kind of been the story of it. But I really do highly recommend this book. Books don't have to be out brand new to be recommended. Well, thank you, Steve from Georgia Stan. I had no idea. They're called rebound headaches, Bob. Well, I got one right now, and ibuprofen doesn't even touch it. But I made a promise a long time ago, and I try to stick to it. That I would never do Limbaugh Radio. That I would never get whacked out of my mind on opioids and get behind the mic. And so I determined early this morning that that I was going to give it a go this evening. And so I put the bottle down. Put the bottle down, John. Put that bottle down. And haven't touched them. And I seem to be okay. I've stayed on schedule with the ibuprofen. I had a loading dose of ibuprofen, or not a loading dose, a standard dose, right before airtime. And, you know, this experience makes me think that nobody who has ever said a goddamn word about the opioid crisis and never has had need of them needs to ever say a word about it. If there was any justice in this world, any politician who ever spoke the word opioid or wrung his hands or clutched her pearls about it would be struck mute by an almighty God if they'd never been in a situation where they were desperately needed. Because if I had not had them, I would not be here. Because things like this will cause you to contemplate the nature of existence. And because we are a certified shrine of the goddess of irony, it was not lost on me that I spent a considerable amount of time on Friday talking about the suicide of Anthony Bourdain. And there was a whole lot of memorials and stuff, CNN, but now they're just back to regular broadcasting. But Friday, I said that that one needed to have a sense of perspective. And then the goddess of irony handed me one. And so way in the depths of it, when I was sitting in bed sweating and hurting. I looked at Agnes very candidly and said, "Honey, if I knew that this was going to be my life, I would end it. If this was just an open-ended affair, I'd be gone. Because there's no reason to put up with this. This is just too much. This is past the ability of the human spirit to conquer." And as much as I hate them, and I do hate them because they make me feel like crap, I don't care what the holistic healers or the homeopaths or the weed eaters or what I don't mean pot say. You can't wish away this kind of pain. And the only thing that saved me was being able to shut everything down, drink water, and get what relief for pain I could get. And it didn't even take all the pain away. It made it bearable. And I have a feeling this is going to stick in my mind for a long time every time somebody who has never dealt with that kind of pain starts prattling on about the opioid crisis. Well, the substances have a purpose, and they terrify me. The idea of trying to scramble around and satisfy an addiction to that and not have a cooperating doctor, that's another of those moments when you go, no, sorry. But they have a purpose. And that purpose needs to be acknowledged. And the people who rely upon them for legitimate needs need to be taken into account. And there are people who need them on a constant basis. And to try to pretend that we can teach them to stare at their navels until the pain goes away and say, "Om," fuck that. Modern chemical medicine exists for a reason. Because I would not be surprised if this sort of thing probably killed people. It still kills people. Idiopathic pancreatitis has both a high morbidity and a high mortality rate. So, just please remember the next time that somebody says, we've got to do something about the opioid crisis. Well, remember, there are people that when we talk about taking opioids out of the hands of people who abuse them, we're making life miserable for the people who don't. And they are brutally difficult to get for the people who do. Brutally difficult to get. It's 25 past the hour, and I need to say this because, when I'm not live on air, I worry because that means that the ability of this program to stay on the air is dependent on me being on the air. We would have come into Monday knocked down, or we came into Monday down $200 because we didn't finish last week. That meant we had a $400 fundraising goal on Monday. Well, thankfully, Michael in Madison and Terrace in California took a bite out of that, so it was only $320. Last night it would have been $520. Tonight it's $720. And there are bills awaiting payment right now. And I don't know, if I'm on air tomorrow night, 9:20, if I'm 11:20 on Friday, if we don't pare it down. Thank you so much to our subscribers. You know, after the first couple of days of the month, the subscribers become a smaller and smaller group. For instance, this morning, this day of the month, the 13th, we have one subscriber, and that's Gary out in Oregon. Thank you, Gary. Thanks also go out to Angelica in Oregon. Thank you, Angelica. Thank you very kindly to Christopher. Thank you very much indeed to Paul in California. And thanks to Gary there in Bronxville, provider of the solace that I took in a good bit of history to read. Thank you, Gary. And thanks to Mark in Minnesota. Thank you to Joseph, very kindly. And thank you to Mary Bell in Kansas. Thanks very kindly to Christopher, another Christopher, in Oregon. Thanks to John in Maryland. Thank you very much, John. Thank you to Tony, one of our oldest and longest standing subscribers, Tony and Chico. Thank you. Thank you to Brendan in Oregon. And thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks very much to Don, who's been with us for a long time. Thank you very kindly to Judy in Rochester. Thank you, Judy. And finally, thanks to Kathleen in Minnesota. And thank you to Khalil in Fort Worth. Thank you very much, one and all. Because the fact of the matter is, bills got to be paid, and they're kind of remorseless in their desire to have them paid. And what we really, really need is those $410 a month subscribers. And, this just kind of highlights, that. Don't go there, Randy. Randy in PA says, it should be noted that Bourdain pissed off both the Israelis and Dr. Kissinger. So suicide? Maybe not. No. Bourdain suicided. A little more detail came out about that over the weekend. Looks like there may have been girlfriend problems. And he has famously stated in the past that he didn't handle the ends of relationships particularly well. Note coming from Clarity. Clarity says, I'm not sure how I would be without cannabis. My pain doctor tells me opioids are a surefire way to relapsing back to booze. So it's a lesser of two evils, and at this time I'm managing my pain, and I have legal access and ability to prepare tinctures and edibles as well as vapes and joints. You ain't learnt from that last yogurt fast. I heart you. Before modern analgesia, it was truly sawbones out there. Yeah, you're right, Clarity. It's not a matter of learning, Clarity. It's a matter of you don't know when it's all just going to go sideways. And look, it's frustrating as hell. No health insurance. But I'm one of those, you know, who, if you hand me a lemon, I will squeeze like hell and try to make lemonade of it. Because however tiny it may be, I have a platform. And I can do something that few or no other people who do this can do. I can talk about what it means to actually be among the uninsured. You might recall that xenophobic rage Barbie, Tommy Lauren, rails against the Affordable Care Act.
Obamacare.
She didn't. That's not her accent. But, of course, she's on her parents' insurance, which happens solely because of the existence of the Affordable Care Act. I'll hazard a guess that there aren't any white wing broadcasters out there who run around with no access to health insurance. And frankly, not many on our side of this debate are either. Some perhaps, but not many. And so I can talk firsthand as a primary source about what it does to you to have no access to health care, because I have none. I tried. Back during open enrollment, I tried. I filled out my Affordable Care Act marketplace stuff, and they said, why, you couldn't afford this if you tried. We'll refer you to your state's Medicaid program. Who then said, oh, no, you're way too filthy rich for Medicaid. And so you go, oh, well. And so, Agnes and I have been trying to make some lifestyle changes so that I won't need to go to the doctor. And no matter how hard you try, sometimes it doesn't work out. And you wind up needing the doctor, but you can't go. Or you wind up actually needing maybe hospitalization, but you can't go. A couple of years back, we sat down and talked about all this, and they said, well, you know, $250,000 worth of surgery, and you might be right as rain and never have to deal with this again. Or we might kill you on the table. You know, that's why they call it practicing medicine, not getting medicine right all the time. But this is the reality. This is what happens. Whatever his many and numerous flaws were, Alan Grayson got it right. The Republican health care plan is don't get sick, and if you do get sick, die quickly. because they frankly just don't give a good old-fashioned damn. And that's not just how it is for me. That's how it is for millions of Americans. And for tens of thousands of Americans on any given year, it results in a death sentence. And it's not some sterile policy discussion. It is goddamn well existential. And, you know, I remember years ago when I was contemplating buying, you know, being able to buy insurance, which I'm not. You know, being told by the one of the members of the community, well, you can't tax the Horn community for your health care, Bob. So, you know, there's that. Thanks for the responses here. There are challenges on the table right now. From Gary out in Oregon, and this goes back to last night, a $50 challenge. Les just said, all right, the welcome back, Bob, and I finally saved enough to get my reefer, for the truck, that is. I know what a reefer is, Les. Challenge, $25 from y'all gets Bob 50. So that's 75. And Robert in Australia has put forward a $75 challenge. Feel better soon, Robert in Oz. Thank you, Robert. So that would make knock down $300 of the $720. That we're missing if folks will jump in. Thank you very kindly to Glenn for jumping in. And thank you to Charlene in Rhode Island. So let me do a little quick math. So if the challenge was met now, that would take us down to $335 to go. And if that was the case, then if this proves to be some, if I have to miss another night or something like that, then we'll have the bills paid. Here's the other problem, by the way. I have to be gone most of next week. I don't want to be, but I have to be. You may recall last month I went to my aunt's funeral. Well, that was the funeral. She's being interred with all that goes with it at Arlington National Cemetery with her husband, my uncle, at the end of next week. So I don't just have to get over this and get better. I have to get to D.C. And so, you know, that's part of it, too. And then on top of it, the last portion of my immediate family is coming up to go to the service as well. And they'll be here on Father's Day, which is Sunday. Which means I'll probably be away from the mic Monday and Tuesday, and hopefully behind the mic on Wednesday, leave here on Thursday, and then gone Friday, and then maybe, just maybe, on Monday, what would that be? Monday, June 25th, everything comes back to something resembling normal. So that's where it stands. Thank you very kindly to Colin. That means Gary's challenge is knocked down, fulfilled. Thank you, Colin. Thank you very much. this is not to say that the only thing on my mind of late has been... I just figured, you know, I think maybe I'm a little bit more candid about the everyday doings of my boring everyday life than some are. And where it has a relationship with the real life day-to-day struggles of the set that really doesn't have any need for knowing what fork to use with the little tiny sea monkey shrimp and which fork to use with the oysters and which fork to use with the lobster set, that maybe there's some benefit in that. Oh, by the way, the Trump regime, via Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, has announced they will not defend the Affordable Care Act anymore. Because it's because the aforementioned Beauregard has determined that it is unconstitutional. Among which means, you know, hello, pre-existing conditions. Right. So we have that to look forward to. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Yep, says Darlene, girlfriend problems. That's my take on things as well. The photos of her with the reporter were taken down or scrubbed from the internet, as they say. I also don't think he was necessarily over the second wife. They hadn't divorced yet either, so she's still next of kin and responsible for the arrangements when his body's returned to the States. Open relationship, asks Darlene. I tend to think my ass. But she and Rose McGowan are in control of the narrative. Bourdain can no longer speak for himself. That said, what happened is no one's fault. It's just a terribly tragic course of events. Exactly. Exactly. Thank you, Darlene. Yeah, it was just sad. And Azia Argento then showed up on Instagram in a torn black T-shirt. You know, Bourdain was referred to sometimes as the Sid Vicious of cooking or whatever. She showed up wearing a T-shirt that said "Fuck everyone," with a picture of Sid Vicious on it, and under the photograph, she inserted the words, "You know who you are." So, right. Now, like I said, I've been paying attention to the goings on of the world, even though I've been not at my best. A couple of things to share with you, because you're probably more likely to hear it here than most anywhere else. You know, I took a couple of trips to D.C. trying to get movement on the dirty bit of business with Ryan Shrinky Zinke's Department of the Interior deciding to quash the review, the National Academy of Sciences review of the mountaintop removal health data that was actually requested by the chief public health officer of this state, Rahul Gupta. And we had a lot of meetings in a number of offices that we hoped could be helpful. and we worked with some of our other allies up there. Well, meanwhile, a magazine called Pacific Standard was working on it too. And they dropped a FOIA on the Department of Interior. And they actually, it took them a while, but they complied with the FOIA. And yeah, it was every bit as dirty as we suspected. Just as background, so late in the Obama administration, the Department of the Interior found $1 million, which they provided to the National Academy of Sciences for the aforementioned review. The purpose was to review the data and find out if it was scientifically valid. And there were hearings held. I went to one of them. Others of my colleagues went to some of the other ones. And it became apparent that, yes, there would be findings that this data was valid. And that, yes, just as the hillbillies have been saying for nearly two decades now, there's something that takes place when they do mountaintop removal that makes the people who live around it very sick, and some of them get very dead. A lot of the work had to do with a review of work done by Michael Hendricks, whose TED Talk you heard, I've actually played on this program. He has, and you know, again, he's a scientist. He's not a policy guy. He's not a politician. He's not an activist or a tree hugger. And as a scientist, he has no doubt whatsoever that mountaintop removal is killing people. He even put a number on it, about 1,200 a year in the counties where it's practiced in West Virginia. And that's just the dead people. That's not the sick people. Well, it turns out that there are a lot of little Eichmanns. Oh, that's not fair, Bob. Yeah, it is. The Trump administration has a lot of... has a lot of little Eichmanns in various... In the various cabinet agencies. And there's no shortage of them in the Department of the Interior. And the folks over at Pacific Standard have identified some of them. In particular, and, you know, when we hear the phrase Little Eichmann, we think of Hannah Arendt's term, the banality of evil. Well, one of those practitioners of the banality of evil is one Catherine McGregor. Catherine McGregor used to work on the Republican side of the House Natural Resources Committee, led by Representative Rob Bishop, a Republican from Utah, who now wants to see the Bears Ears National Monument and Grand Staircase Escalante blown into a million tiny pieces. That's what she did before she got to the Department of Interior. Now she's pulling down a nice salary at DOI as the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Land and Minerals Management. And she has a tremendous amount of power and a tremendous amount of influence. And she is the face of the Trump regime that is turned out toward the energy extraction industries. Well, Pacific Standard got her work calendar via their FOIA request. And it turns out she, in 2017, she had over 100 meetings. That would be about one every 3 days in a calendar year. It's a smaller ratio when you take out the Saturdays and the Sundays, and God knows what she did with those. But she had over 100 meetings with fossil fuel firms, industry lobbyists, other commercial interests during her first year in office. 100 meetings with extractive industry groups or representatives of those groups between January 2017 and January 2018. On the other hand, well, less than 10 meetings with the Wilderness Society, Sportsmen for the Boundary Waters, or any of the other conservation organizations. And along the way, it turns out she had a big hand in quashing this review. Pacific Standard describes it as being abruptly halted, and that is a perfect description, because one day there was a review, and the next, it was over. Remember, it was $1 million. She met with the National Mining Association. Remember them? That's the same group that criticized one of the studies, saying that it was invalid because the study failed to take into account all the incest that people in Appalachia commit. Nice people, the National Mining Association. When the review was halted, the Charleston Gazette-Mail published a letter from the National Mining Association, the president thereof, that called into question the legitimacy of the research and referred to it as a symbolic gesture left over from an anti-coal administration. Heather McGregor is a scumbag. Okay? Most people, I didn't know who she was. Now I do. Now I look at her, and I see the smiling face and the perfectly manicured pearly white teeth of a woman who kills hillbillies. You know, all the psychopaths and all the mass murderers don't have to look like Charlie Manson. Sometimes they look like Catherine MacGregor. And she leaned in on that. Emails obtained through a FOIA request show that Catherine MacGregor had a hand in ensuring the health study's cancellation. Indeed, she appears to have been keenly interested in the matter. On August 17, 2017, MacGregor sent a prodding email to Glenda Owens, then the acting director of the Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement, concerning the health review. "Hey, Glenda, girlfriend, I thought you told me on the phone that this was postponed," I added the girlfriend part. Glenda Owens wrote back minutes later, "Hey, Kate, no, sorry if I was not clear. We're contacting the National Academies tomorrow, both by phone and sending a letter to memorialize the conversation." Then another email goes back from Kate. Glenda, let me know how the call goes tomorrow after it's made. Well, the very next day, August the 18th, 2017, the cease and desist letter went out to the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. Stop work on the study. And she forwarded the letter on to Kate McGregor, killer of hillbillies. A spokescreep, Faith Vandervoort, for the DOI, said, the review was paused for several months but was closed out in April. After a review concluded it was redundant. Huh, how about that? It was redundant. That's interesting. There hadn't been any of them. The National Academies of Science had never done one of these. It was not redundant. That is a lie. Pacific Standard writes, McGregor's role in the study's cancellation is noteworthy for one principal reason. In the months leading up to the cancellation, her calendar shows that she had no fewer than 6 meetings with the most powerful mining players in the country. In both April and May of 2017, she met with the National Mining Association. In March and June, meanwhile, she met with Arch Cole, a longtime practitioner of mountaintop removal mining in Appalachia. I stood up at the one meeting I attended and I spoke forcefully about the need to end mountaintop removal. I spoke bluntly, didn't use any dirty words. And immediately, some pasty-faced, doughy mining creep got up on the other side of the room and stomped out. You could tell he was a mining creep. She's a nasty piece of work, Catherine McGregor.
Oh, but her children love her.
They wouldn't love her if they lived in Appalachia. No, they wouldn't. And she's going at it hand over fist. McGregor's calendar, Pacific Standard writes. McGregor's calendar also shows that she participated in at least 6 meetings last spring and summer. Hey, friends in Minnesota, look out. Participated in at least 6 meetings last spring and summer with lobbyists or executives affiliated with Twin Metals Minnesota, a firm owned by the Chilean mining giant Antofagasta PLC, that wants to build a copper-nickel mine near the Boundary Waters Wilderness in northern Minnesota. The Boundary Waters are a magnificent place, and they will be ruined if that goes through. The Obama administration had taken measures to block the proposed mine, which is ardently opposed by conservationists in the region, as well as the native peoples who depend on it and live there. Trump's Department of the Interior, however, has worked diligently to reverse course and get the mine up and running. Just last month, the Bureau of Land Management, which McGregor's office helps supervise, reinstated the company's mineral rights leases near the wilderness area. There will be a lawsuit. She also, Kate McGregor did, had meetings with, in April 2017, with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Well, that sounds benign, doesn't it? Or just a foundation that works on public policy. Yeah, it's benign until you realize that it's a white-wing group funded by the Koch brothers. That does everything in its power, under the guise of public policy, to oppose any environmental regulations whatsoever. shortly after the meeting, Bureau of Land Management settled a lawsuit with a group of landowners in a dispute with the Bureau of Land Management. And the Texas Public Policy Foundation described that as a major win. So we got that. But there's actually more to the story. By the way, thanks to Scott. Thank you very kindly. That means that 10 out of the $25, $25 challenge from Les has been met. 15 more for that, and then $75 challenge on the table from Robert in Australia. And that'll take a big bite out of the agonies. So thank you, Scott. Thank you very, very much. As I said, we had a lot of meetings with several congressional offices when the NASEM review was quashed. And one of our best allies, and without a doubt one of the finest members of the House of Representatives, one of the nearest to being an ordinary guy, a regular Joe, that there is in that body, is a man from Arizona by the name of Raul Grijalva. I've sat down with him. I've just chatted, you know. And he is a fine fellow. Well, Raul Grijalva's been there a while, and so he has some seniority. And he's the ranking member on the House Natural Resources Committee. You see why I'm doing this? Because you're probably not going to hear this on the programs. Everybody else is going to be obsessed with Trump. If we can take the House back in November, big if. But if we can, Raul Grijalva will be the chair of the House Natural Resources Committee. And I've got a feeling we will see some hell raised. Grijalva. Inspector General report proves Trump's Interior Department lied about missing mountaintop removal research funding. Because you see, Representative Grijalva, who, being from Arizona, has no real reason apart from the simplicity of his human compassion for his fellow Americans, which so many on that hill don't have. Raul Grijalva cares what happens to hillbillies. We're real to him. We're not imaginary like leprechauns and unicorns and Keebler elves. And so he started out by writing to the Department of the Interior, and the Department of Interior sent him back a Xeroxed copy of their middle finger, for all intents and purposes. So not taking no for an answer. He then made a request to the Office of Inspector General of the Department of Interior, and he asked him what happened to the money. Where'd it go? Well, huh. The DOI, the Department of Interior, under Secretary Ryan Zinke, has been lying for months about why and how it canceled a study on the human health impacts of mountaintop removal mining, a deadly practice with a long history of causing environmental damage throughout Appalachia. The Office of Inspector General finds that DOI could not explain why it canceled the halfway finished report, and that administration officials could produce no documentary evidence of any review of grants and cooperative agreements on which the decision was supposedly based. The press release from the Department of Natural Resources Committee, Democratic side, then recites the history that you already know of the suppression of the review. Remember, the original reason for doing this was that, we're fiscal conservatives, so we're going to review all grants over $100,000 to make sure we're being good stewards of the taxpayers' money. Yeah, right. Well, the OIG says, in regard to cooperative agreement between NAS and OSMRI dealing with the health impacts of mountaintop mining, we found that NAS was told to cease activities on August 18, 2017. Other than a general document entitled Secretary of the Interior's Priorities, departmental officials were unable to provide specific criteria used for their determination whether to allow or cease certain grants and cooperative agreements. In other words, they just lied, you know, because it's the Trump administration, and because they're Republicans, they just lied. The OIG said it determined that $455,110, the amount that had been billed, was wasted because no final product was produced, which, of course, was the entire purpose, because they were getting close to issuing a final product that was going to say that mountaintop removal kills hillbillies, and that more study was needed. Which is sort of not the same thing as what the DOI said, that it was redundant, it was redundant. Well, it wasn't. And the fact of the matter is, if it's just redundant, why were they so afraid of it? Because, as is almost always the case, Republicans, and in this case maggots, are terrified of reality, terrified of science. Grijalva said, this administration does whatever it wants and lies to the public about it, and their attitude is that the public will just have to deal with it. Republicans in Congress have shown they couldn't care less about conducting real oversight. As long as Trump's party is in power in Washington, more money will disappear, more lies will follow, and there will be no accountability. There follows brief timeline about the suppression of the review. If you'd like to read it, the press release, you can go to democrats-naturalresources.house.gov. And you'll find it there. Thank you very kindly to Libby. Libby just finished off Les's challenge and went $10 into Robert's. So we've got $65 to complete Robert's challenge now. And thank you very, very much. So, yeah, I dare say there's not going to be a whole lot of drum beating about that, but that's actually a pretty big damn deal. Big damn deal indeed. If a Democrat did something like that, Fox News would be 24/7 on it and screaming for people to go to prison. And I told you I largely took a powder on the Singapore sling, the Singapore fling between Kim Jong Bad Golf Pants and Julius Geezer. Apparently a big deal was made out of the fact that Julius Geezer showed up over there with a video to show to Kim Jong-un. The thing is, and I watched it, and it's just the height of stupid. I mean, he could have taken an Etch-a-Sketch, I guess, but it wouldn't have had quite the flash and dash. It was a 4-minute video in Korean and English, and the Trump regime said it was made by Destiny Pictures. Well, guess what? Yeah, they lied. They lied. And in lying, they created a real pain in the ass for a guy in California by the name of Mark Castaldo. Because Mark Castaldo owns a film production company in California named, come on, Destiny Pictures. So he tweeted, woke up to hundreds of emails and calls from all over the world. Crazy. I want to know why they used my company's name. Well, because they're the Trump regime, Mr. Castaldo. So then the reporters flurried back over to the National Security Council and said, hey, Destiny Pictures says they didn't make this. And the National Security Council John Bolton, proprietor. Yeah, he lied. He helped lie us into a war one time, so he might be a liar too. Yeah, he's a liar. John Bolton said, or actually, Garrett Marquis, a National Security Council spokescreep, said, didn't talk to anybody, just put out a statement, just type it up, get it out there, make them go away. The video was created by the National Security Council to help the president demonstrate the benefits of complete denuclearization and a vision of a peaceful and prosperous Korean peninsula. You know, when I started the thing, I was waiting for the big Trump casino hotel to be shown in the middle of downtown Pyongyang. The Guardian reports, when asked about the decision to present the video as made by a non-existent company, an NSC spokesman said there will be no further comment. On the other hand, Ned Price, a former NSC spokesman, said, from my understanding, they were just using Destiny Pictures as a play on words. It just so happens there's a studio by that name in California. Yeah, leave it to this White House to fail to conduct basic due diligence, and that, of course, leaves aside the fact that they thought it prudent to try to out North Korea in the propaganda department. The whole enterprise reeks of amateurism and comes off as an attempt to check the box on a harebrained idea that presumably originated in the Oval Office. Among other things, it had these pretty full-color images of happy, shiny, smiling people in a North Korea that's been the beneficiary of capitalist largesse and an alternative reality where the North Koreans stay on their present course. And that future appears in black and white and shows U.S. warplanes in the air and missiles launching. Trump was asked about it yesterday, and he said, "We had it made up. I showed it to them today, actually during the meeting. Toward the end of the meeting, I think he loved it. We had it on cassette, an iPad." That's right. In the mind of Julius Geezer, an iPad is now a cassette. Mr. President, how much does a cassette? How much does an iPad cost?
About $1,000.
How much does a cassette cost?
About $1,000. Definitely $1,000. They played it. About 8 of their representatives were watching it. I thought they were fascinated by it. I thought it was well done. I showed it to you because that is the future.
That's good. Steve in New York says it sounded like a timeshare video. And had all the charm of one, too, without a doubt. But the whole Singapore fling is making some people kind of uncomfortable. Mike Pompeo, who is now the Secretary of State, that's still a tough one to swallow. Religious maniac who graduated first in his class at West Point. You have to say that all the time when you say Mike Pompeo. It's kind of like in Idiocracy, where they say, "Brought to you by Carl's Jr." Graduated first in his class from West Point. That was the year that the West Point graduating class was made up entirely of idiots. A reporter questioned Mike Pompeo today about a very simple, basic issue relative to the statement signed at the end of the Singapore fling. And Rachel Oswald over at Congressional Quarterly had the story via Twitter. Pompeo attacks reporter and anyone who questions whether CVID made it into statement. CVID being verification of disarmament. That's the shorthand for it, CVID. The verification of denuclearization and disarmament. The reporter asked, you know, how can you make that claim? And Mike Pompeo lost his shit. Rachel Oswald said, "Pompeo attacks reporter and anyone who questions whether CVID made it into statement. I find that question insulting and ridiculous and frankly ludicrous. I just have to be honest with you. It's a game, and one not ought to play games with serious matters like this." No, that's not a game. Now, I remember when the god of the Republican Party, St. Ronnie of Raygun, bobbed his greasy head in relation to the Russians and said,
I heard an old Russian...
No, that's Trump.
I heard an old Russian proverb that said, trust but verify.
And whoo! Oh, all the Republicans were running around. I mean, they were getting trust but verify tattoos and getting it carved into their skin and getting trust but verify ball caps and t-shirts. Ooh, we were going to trust but verify the Russians. Mm-hmm, yeah, that's a great idea, that verified. Now to ask how anybody can claim that there's any verification going to go on with North Korea when North Korea didn't say they were going to let it happen. Well, Pompeo loses his Christian shit. I find that question insulting and ridiculous and frankly ludicrous. Over on Twitter, Rachel Oswald continued and said, still recapping this Pompeo presser because it really is remarkable for many reasons. U.S. Secretary of State pushing back against reporters, trying to make sense of developments in a major national security concern, says trying to gain understanding to share with readers is unhelpful. And, you know, here's the transaction. Question. But how will it be verified? Did you discuss that? Do you have... Oh, we're there. The modalities are beginning to develop. Program-related activity programs, right? You know, anytime I see modalities, well, being used by a Mike Pompeo, oh, we're there. The modalities are beginning to develop. There'll be a great deal of work to do. There's a long way to go.
Such a long way to go.
There's much to think about, but don't say silly things. No, don't. It's not productive. It's not productive to do that, to say silly things. It's just, it's unhelpful.
Some people want to fill the world by saying silly things. Oh, no.
Sorry. Question. Well, I think it's unhelpful for your readers, your listeners, for the world. It's because it doesn't remotely reflect the American position or the understandings that the North Koreans have either. We're just trying to understand how it reflects what you asked it. Yeah, and I just articulated that for you, too. Maggot. That's Field Marshal Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State. No, I added the maggot part. But the funny part is the Secretary of State now believes himself in charge of what is helpful for readers. Because in the final analysis, no matter what Julius Geezer thinks he got a whole bunch of nothing. There's no there. But, of course, on the other side of it, all the maggots are absolutely all over themselves, declaring that he's wait, no, I better not say brought peace in our time. That's kind of a loaded phrase, isn't it? Yeah. Am I the only one who thought of Neville Chamberlain in this regard? Because Donnie Dimwit's running all over hollering about how much peace he done bring. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, Donnie Two Scoops thinks that Kim Jong-un is a simpleton like himself who will be swayed by a ginned up Fox News video versus as Donnie would be. Pathetic. I'd like to tell you it's all going to be okay. But I try not to just get behind this microphone and start lying for the sake of lying. No. Oh, that. Yeah, I knew. I knew that. Yes. There's so much stuff to talk about.
Virginia had their primary yesterday. Corey Stewart will be the Republican nominee for Senate. He will face Tim Kaine. The oh-so-forgettable running mate to Hillary Clinton. Julius Geezer tweeted about it this morning. Congratulations to Corey Stewart for his great victory for Senator from Virginia. Now he runs against a total stiff, Tim Kaine, who is weak on crime and borders and wants to raise your taxes through the roof. Don't underestimate Corey, a major chance of winning. Well, we can now raise to 9. I think the number 9, the number of out-and-out, no-kidding white supremacists running on the Republican ticket in November, because Corey Stewart is a white supremacist. Oh, yeah, we're still pussyfooting around white nationalist, alt-right, bullshit like that. He's a white supremacist. And he rose to stardom in the Virginia Republican Party by defending our sacred monuments of our Confederate heritage. Yeah, by the way, he's less Virginian than I am. He's from Minnesota. Last night he said to his fellow Clavern members, "We're going to kick the crap out of Tim Kaine. That's the strategy." No, really. He's been making racist, anti-Semitic remarks for quite some time. Among other things, he's a big fan of Paul Neelan. He's one of those other white supremacist candidates for congressional office. He's running for the House in Wisconsin. Called him one of his personal heroes. Neelan refers to himself as a pro-white Christian American candidate. And since Paul Ryan is not running, Paul Neelan is. Yes, that's right. The people of Janesville, Wisconsin, have a chance to send an, no kidding, honest to goodness, real live white supremacist to the House of Representatives. Corey Stewart has paid money to Paul Neelan. After Paul Neelan made some anti-Semitic comments, though, Corey Stewart said, I no longer support him, because those are not our Virginia values. Among other things, Corey Stewart said that Republicans who criticized the Unite the Right rally were playing right into the hands of the left wing. All the weak Republicans, they couldn't apologize fast enough. They played right into the hands of their left wing. Those Nazi people have nothing to do with the Republican Party. There was no reason to apologize. Then, of course, the Nazis went out and voted for Corey Stewart yesterday. It wasn't like he was running unopposed. So just to review, yes, Donald J. Trump has endorsed another Klansman, another white supremacist.
To be fair, the Republicans didn't have much to choose from yesterday. They had a House representative in Nick Freitas and Minister E.W. Choksom, and he won with 44.9% of the vote. There's no runoff. And he has said, Corey Stewart has, that he is going to run a vicious, that was the word he used, vicious race against Tim Kaine. One hopes that he will, his pro-Confederacy stance and his racist attitudes will have been sufficient to ruin any chances in November. But the Republican National Committee and the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, they couldn't, for some reason or another, they weren't answering their phones. And they didn't return requests for comment. But that's okay. They'll be behind him 100%. And you know what? The same people that drive around Virginia with their urine-colored snake tags on their trucks and their Confederate flags, they will run, not walk, to vote. For this putrid Klansman. So you're gonna need women of conscience, and the civilized people who live in Northern Virginia. If the Klansmen and the white supremacists are to be drowned out, but yeah. Geezer Disgustus endorsed another white supremacist. Because Geezer Disgustus, right? Oh, thank you, Lee. Lee says it's not just you. ElectoralVote.com says, Trump's own Republican Party was more restrained in its celebration of the, talking about the Singapore fling. On one hand, they recognized that the delicate peace on the Korean Peninsula just got a little less shaky and that war became a little less likely. Senate Leader Mitch McConnell and Speaker Paul Ryan, among others, released carefully worded statements expressing their cautious approval for Trump's diplomacy. On the other hand, veteran Republican office holders realized that it is necessary not to trust Kim too much based on both his track record and the track record of dictators like him. Trump, who knows little of history, might want to arrange a briefing on the Munich Agreement, for example. Yeah, it's nice when it's not just me. Thank you, Lee. In regard to the signed statement coming out of the Singapore fling, James says, isn't this a treaty? What is the Senate going to say about this deal? There's a third of them up for re-election. Pardon me if you've already talked about this. I just logged on. No, the Senate doesn't have anything to say about this. It's not a treaty. It's little more than notes passed in class by a couple of the D students in the back of the room. So the Senate, you know, the Senate might try to. Well, I mean, Mitch McConnell's not going to let anything get said, and so it'll probably be crickets. Like I said, we've got $65 to go to finish off the last of the challenges, which will go a long way toward knocking down the deficit that we have, and then I can turn around and make a payment, and hopefully we'll make it to the end of June. This is just silly. Generally speaking, I enjoy the commentary that takes place on The View. I enjoy Whoopi. Enjoy. But there was I learned about something through a clip from The View today. I learned that there's a medical thing. There's a term out there called avocado hand. And the world found out about avocado hand today because Joy Behar, or not today, maybe yesterday. Yesterday. I saw the clip today. Joy Behar missed work on Monday because she had avocado hand. What you ask is avocado hand. Well, I was ready for that. So most of us, I trust, except the people who hate avocados, you'd have no reason to, have sliced an avocado before. You know, you cut through it, you hit the seed, and you just kind of go all the way around it. You set the knife down, and you sort of, and you just twist it a little bit, and the two halves will come apart. One half won't have the pit in it, the other half will. What to do with the pit? Well, if you use a spoon, you're probably going to take some of the flesh, of the avocado with you, so you don't want to do that. And the way I learned long, long, long ago to do it is you take the blade of your knife and you just, with the blade of the knife, enough to get it gently stuck in the pit, and you just give it a little twist, and it pops right out, and then you knock the pit into the garbage with your knife. This apparently is not how Joy Behar removes pits from avocados. Joy apparently removes a pit from an avocado. Well, if I can get the audio up here. I was just sort of stunned when I watched this. Let's see if you are too, you know, because these little sort of bubble off plum stories often capture the not only my attention but the attention of the Horn Family Community Congregation. So as soon as this thing queues up. We're ready to go, and here we go.
As you can see, Joy Behar is back at the table, but she has a warning, and I think you should all listen up because it's important. Go ahead, Joy.
No. Well, why I was out.
Why were you out?
Because Saturday night, on my way to the event at the retreat, I stabbed myself in the hand with a knife. I was trying to desperately eat something, so I was trying to open up an avocado, and I stuck the knife into the pit to get it out. Steve says, why don't you use a spoon? All right.
But, you know, part of it's the visual, and of course this is radio, but, you know, she shows herself holding the knife like, you know, Norman going after Janet Leigh in Psycho, you know, and with the point of the knife, just stabbing the avocado. I'm like, damn, really? I mean, that's going to hurt. I remember a long time ago, my father loved good ham. And he'd buy it on the bone, and he didn't want to miss any of it. And so we were pretty much, he was slicing it off, freezing it. Mom would fix him sandwiches for his lunch to take with him to the furnace. And he kept his knives in the house razor sharp. And he was getting all of those ham trimmings off that bone. And every now and then he'd catch himself as he was drawing that razor sharp knife toward himself. And he'd look at my mother and say, Margaret, I'm turning this knife around because I'm going to cut myself. And so he'd turn the knife around and go the other way for a while. But sure enough, sooner or later, he'd turn it around and it was coming back toward it. And sure enough, the blade bound on a hunk of gristle or something popped over it and, you know, that tender spot right between your index finger and your thumb. And off to the hospital we went for stitches. Which leads to the old saying, always cut towards yourself and you'll never cut anyone else. So, you know, I had that as background. But it's the you know, I mean, of her, you know, she holds the imaginary avocado in her hand and she stabs it. And I'm thinking maybe a vacation's called for. Maybe just get away for a little bit, stop, because, like I said, I'm not feeling the best, but if there's been any, little ray of sunshine, I've been too sick to get too outraged about anything Trumpian. Don't worry, I'll get back to full outrage soon. Anyway, back to the story.
I stabbed myself. Well, I never had pain quite so intense. It was awful. But the reason I'm telling this to you...
Stab yourself in the palm of the hand, it's going to hurt.
Steve says I'm an auto-terrorist. Like, I do it to myself. But apparently there is a syndrome called avocado hand.
Yes.
Yes, I know, it sounds real. Fun. It's real. And the doctor said, oh, we get this all the time. Yeah. And bagels also. So anytime you're holding...
Really? All the time? Really? There's that many of my fellow Americans who go at bagels and avocados like they're trying to murder them? For the sake of my opinion of my fellow Americans... I like to think that the doctor was just trying to make Joy feel a little bit better about just having tried to murder her hand. I mean, anybody who's seen The Godfather, you know, with the sleeps with the fishes, ow! You know, right there on the bar. I get a bagel that's not sliced. One, I get the proper tool, a bread knife, a serrated bread knife. And you hold it flat on. And you saw into it, and you keep rotating it as you saw through it. And you don't bloody up the bagel. And the avocado, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, James, you're right. Ham bone, you put that in the pot of beans. Well, you do after you've gotten most of the ham off of it, not all of it. And that's what the ham hocks are for, too. Depression era people, my parents, James, you got to remember that. Back to Joy.
The item and you tried to cut it, you could risk bagel. So what happened was, I guess there must have been an infection. They put me in the hospital overnight.
Yes.
Every 6 hours, I'm on a drip, antibiotic drip, etc. And now I'm better. My finger was, I said, Doctor, I need this finger.
It's her middle finger.
Because you can lose it, by the way.
Whenever you find yourself cutting something where this is the something and this is the knife, it's probably just a dangerous approach. But we thought this might help you, too. I got you a...
That helped. Her colleague, I'm not sure what her name is, who said, you know, if you're doing this, you know, with the you know, Norman Bates approach, that's probably not a good idea. Good for her.
Safety club. Because, girl, I would not... In a little avocado.
Oh, that's very nice of you. I think it could go through. I was thinking instead of this, I'm going to leave the dicing to Rachel Ray, and I'm only going to buy ready-made guacamole.
Guacamole.
That's it.
Yes.
Thank you.
I was shocked when I texted you and you were in the hospital.
Yeah, then
I was shocked.
And Meryl Streep apparently had this, too.
Oh, a lot of people, listen, people all...
Meryl Streep? Really? Okay, I mean, I never dreamed it. Look it. A dull knife is more dangerous than a sharp knife. Use the right knife for the right purpose. Never try to murder your avocado or your bagel. And probably don't try to cut an avocado while, say, there's a clip of Nectarine Nero running or anything. Just, no, don't. Wait a minute. Thank you, Marty. Stop telling us how to slice our avocados and bagels, Bob. Of course, ever since my one lone trip to Texas several years ago, I've been absolutely enamored with the idea of a stuffed avocado. And I've improved on it some. You know, you get the pit out, and then you take your paring knife, and you score the avocado lengthwise and crosswise. You leave it in the skin. You put some salsa and some cheese in the hollow part. But before you do that, before you put it, you just turn them, you know, flesh side down on a hot grill. Let them scorch a little bit, you know, just get some grill marks. Take them back up, put the salsa in, cover it with the cheese, put them back on the grill, close the lid, let the cheese get golden and bubbly and gooey, and take it out and love life. I'm going to do that as soon as I can eat food again. Well, no, I'm going to do that as soon as I'm done with the yogurt diet and then the soup diet, and then I can eat food again. Because that sounds really good. And by the way, if you're worried, that's a good sign. I've started thinking of food again because I had no desire to eat anything. No urge. Just, nope, bring me some more water. And I'm now up to a little sip of Gatorade here and there and a little sip of apple juice here and there. But, yeah. And then the time that I stuffed the avocado with the crab meat, whoa. Just, no. Lee notes the Singapore Agreement. It's definitely less than the Constitution, which I believe was referred to by the George W. Bush as a goddamn piece of paper. Yeah, I remember that too. They laughed all the way back to North Korea, and we know it. They're probably still telling Donald Trump jokes over there. I think maybe I know one word in Korean, so I'm not even going to attempt it. And I'm not going to do the accent or anything because, no. But, you know, there's probably a lot of chatter going on in Pyongyang that says word, 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 Trump, word, 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 uproarious laughter. Dear leader, I can't believe he fell for it. Me either. But he's a simple one. And see, we do need to bear, where North Korea is concerned, we need to bear a couple of things in mind. One, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And I remember when Osama bin Laden tried to goad Bill Clinton into starting a stupid war of choice in the Mideast and South Asia by sending truck bombs into the basement of the World Trade Centers. He did not succeed. Whatever other foibles Clinton had, and we could spend a 3-hour program on those. He didn't
he didn't launch a full-scale American military action. And Osama, sitting over in Afghanistan, says, damn it. We'll get him next time. And along comes George W. Bush, and we get the attacks of September 11th, 2001, and Bush falls for it, lock, stock, and barrel. And we're still in that mess. And we show no sign of getting out of that mess anytime in my or your or perhaps your children or grandchildren's lifetime. Do you realize that we now have the children of the people who originally went into Afghanistan, their children are now going into Afghanistan? We may be getting close to the point where the grandchildren of the people who went into Afghanistan will be going into Afghanistan. No shit. So there was that. And then, well, we should remember that the Clinton administration worked out a deal with North Korea. We would provide money and foodstuffs, and they would back away from the nuclear brink. And then the W administration came in. It wasn't North Korea that broke that deal. It was George W. Bush's administration that included, of course, John Bolton, who wants nothing more than to get a few tens of thousands of somebody else's kids, American kids, killed on the Korean Peninsula. He gets off on it. Go figure. Some people like dripping candle wax. Some people play blood sports, knives and pins and needles and shit. The John Boltons and the Henry Kissingers of the world can't get hard unless somebody's dying. That's just sick. So that probably needs to be taken into account. Well, it is about 6 minutes before the hour, and I feel pretty good about having made it through 2 hours this evening. But I've run pretty low on energy here. But I will do everything in my power to be here tomorrow evening, I hope. Just as a reminder, we got $65 to go to finish all the challenges that were on the table. And it would be huge if we could do that. Because, like I said, next week is just a mess. And I'm sorry. But some things you have to do, and this is one of those things. And when somebody drives 1,000 miles to see you, you can't tell them sorry, you know, can't do it. So I probably won't be here Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday, yes. Thursday, no. Friday, no. So if we can knock out that last $65, then the fundraising goal won't be nearly as terrifying tomorrow as it was this evening. And I thank you very, very kindly. On the way out the door, another one of those elections have consequences moments. I watched with horror over the weekend as more stories came out about just how awful we are treating asylum seekers and the ongoing nightmare. Of babies being ripped from their mother's arms. And the depravity and the duplicity of the Republican Party knows no depths. There will never be an issue where we can say, well, you know, no, the Republicans won't sign off on this. They're supporting 9 white supremacists running for office. I mean, take that all the way to the ground with you. It is no longer in the Republican Party, it is no longer a deal breaker in your political career to be a white supremacist. Let that sink in. You know, this isn't 1948. Although it's trying awfully hard to be. But no, in the latest announcement, McClatchy is doing a good job journalism-wise with the immigrant and asylum issue. Migrant, not immigrant, migrant. And they reported that in the next week or so, next couple few weeks, representatives from the Department of Health and Human Services will visit El Paso, Texas, to scout out land for tent cities that have been proposed near Fort Bliss. The tent cities will be designed to incarcerate between 1,000 and 5,000 little children. They're also looking at Dice Air Force Base, Dias Air Force Base in Abilene, and Goodfellow Air Force Base in San Angelo as potential locations for their tent city concentration camps. And by the way, I'm going to continue to use that term, concentration camp. I saw some Snopes posting on it, and it said it was, you know, 50-50 true and not true. No, it's not a concentration camp because there aren't Nazis marching around in it in spiffy Hugo Boss uniforms. That's one argument. But the fact of the matter is, if everybody in the camp is of one ethnicity, and they're being held there as a matter of racism or xenophobia or some sort of ethnic hatred, yes, it's a concentration camp. Now, to be fair, the white wingers, well, Obama administration done did it. Well, the Obama administration did not rip children from their mother's arms and put them in cages. And remember, these are asylum seekers. There's a difference. We have a complete set of laws about asylum seekers. We don't put asylum seekers from other hellscapes in cages the way we do people from Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, etc. Steve in New York notes, oh, how cute, our own little Gazas. Yep. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III recently said in an interview, Most are not infants. Most of them are teenagers, although we do have a number of younger ones now, more than we've seen recently. They're maintained in a very safe environment in cages. Not, I added the in cages part. Not by the law enforcement team at Homeland Security, but put with Health and Human Services. They're kept close by, and if the person pleads guilty to illegally crossing the border, they'd be deported promptly, and they can take their children with them. There's no such plea process in an asylum circumstance. You're either begging for asylum or you're not. And by the way, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III wants you to know that domestic violence down there is no reason to leave your country and come up here and try to claim asylum because your husband will beat the living hell out of you and probably on the verge of murdering you and maybe your baby too. You just need to run somewhere else, honey. Son of a bitch. Oh, and by the way, one last thing on the way out the door. Goddamn DNC. Fucking neoliberal establishment shills. DNC votes unanimously to no longer accept money from fossil fuel companies. No ExxonMobil, no Royal Dutch Shell, no BP. The Democratic National Committee has voted unanimously to ban contributions from fossil fuel companies in a victory for activists and environmental advocates. The DNC will no longer accept donations from corporate political action committees associated with oil, gas, and coal companies, reported by Huffington Post. The committee adopted a resolution along those lines that was put forward by Christine Pelosi. Goddamn Nancy Pelosi! Goddamn DNC! Neoliberal establishment shills! But yeah, that's a thing that the DNC did. Not enough! They gotta let Jill run the DNC. That, then maybe. Just thought I'd share that with you. Marty says, Tent City, Texas. Quick, someone go find George Takei and ask him if that doesn't sound like the old internment camps the Japanese got to live in. By the way, you think Joe Arpaio will be running it? Joe may be a mite old, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some pink panties involved somewhere, especially for the boys. Joe, Republicans just loved that gender humiliation. Meanwhile, Silent R. Lamar says, yeah, Obama did it. Yeah, he did. But he kept the family together. These camps are for people of color. Chasing brown people, then be focusing on black, and then yellow, and any other color other than white. And some white folks, too, I'll bet. I wish I thought you were wrong, Silent R, but I don't. So, that's it for this evening. Steve from Georgistan, occasional pinch hit, utility, chat room moderator, and all around great guy, says, you sound great, but take a break, brother. Go check the new Handmaid's release and relax. I think the show did you some good. Yeah, it did be good to be in here. And I found out a little bit more about my own stamina right now. And this bodes well for being here tomorrow. And I will continue to try not to get all Limbaugh. And hopefully be back here with you tomorrow evening. And thank you, Libby. Thank you, Libby. Libby finished off Robert and Australia's challenge. That means Les's challenge was met. And Robert's challenge was met. And I'm sorry, I'm not all here. I'm missing one, but the challenges were met, and that's wonderful. So that's a real big deal. Oh, Gary's challenge was met. So that means we knocked down a big chunk, and we won't have such a deficit tomorrow. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for patiently putting up with me as I just sort of kvetched in the early part of the program. But it's awful nice to be talking with you again. Those 2 days away felt like a freaking month. Next week is going to be even more so. Thanks again to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you so very much. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little years-long ongoing conversation. Thank you. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.